Jason Russell, co-creator of the Christian charity Invisible Children, which produced that Kony 2012 video, was taken into custody by police Friday night after he was found naked and pounding the sidewalk outside his home in San Diego. His family says criticism of the film may have driven him over the edge. Kony 2012 became the most successful viral video ever, watched by over 80 million people on YouTube. It's an impassioned plea to bring down Joseph Kony, whose Lord's Resistance Army abducted thousands of children and forced them to be child soldiers in Uganda in the 80s and 90s. One of those kids, a boy Jason meets named Jacob, had a brother dying, trying to escape from Kony.
But now I miss you. So it is better when we meet. We are going, even if we are not going to meet, but we may meet in heaven. You see? I don't.
Everything in my heart told me to do something. And so I made him a promise.
And we are also going to do everything that we can to stop them.
Jason Russell says he's spent the last 9 years living up to that promise, organizing young people, selling bracelets and posters, using his toddler son to tell the story, lobbying Washington. In fact, the Obama administration sent U.S. troops to act as military advisors in Uganda last October. Kony 2012 is meant to culminate this April 20th with a blanketing of the world with Joseph Kony posters. So what could be the criticism? Well, Jason mentions briefly in the film that Kony is no longer in Uganda. He's moved to other African countries. But that's not enough for Ugandans. When it was shown in the town of Lira, they threw tomatoes and stopped the film. Angelo Izama is a reporter for the Daily Monitor, Uganda's leading independent newspaper. Angelo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Robin.
You know, Americans, especially young Americans who've signed up for this initiative, you know, they're wearing the bracelets, they're putting up posters with Kony's name. They can't understand the criticism. So can you just sum it up for us?
I think that the immediate response of people who watch the film in Uganda is that it is not about Uganda. There is no war there. The film gives that impression. The conflict has got new victims. We think that the focus should have been there. And many Ugandans would have liked the Invisible Children to recognize that the effort of locals, particularly church leaders and local politicians, to make the solution to the problem a political and a peaceful one. And since Invisible Children had been promoting, even more militarization of the region, some folks were pretty much upset about that.
Is it a matter of maybe even national pride? Do they not want their country portrayed this way right now?
Well, Uganda has suffered a negative image, partly because of our own faults. Joseph Kony and other rebel organizations have emerged out of the civil wars there. Most people recognize the name Idi Amin, who was the poster child for dictators in Africa, who was also Ugandan president in the 70s. Certainly in this recovery period, I can understand why people feel that a film that draws attention to Uganda should have been accurate in its portrayal of the present circumstances, and even then recognize Uganda's own contributions to the end of this conflict, which is that the Ugandan military is right now the principal agent dispatched after Joseph Kony, wherever he is in the Central African Republic.
This is the criticism that we've heard from a lot of corners, that because the film focuses on the white American filmmaker and his young white son, it plays into a sort of a stereotype of Africans needing the white man to come in and save them. Is that a part of the reaction on the part of Ugandans?
I think a lot of Ugandan elites have the sense that, you know, for a long time, the aid industry have promoted this idea of Africans as sort of little children needing to be taken care of, and that, you know, they'll be saved by white benefactors abroad. But I had some of the people who watched the film in Lira, where when it was shown, there was a really negative reaction. And I think that the ordinary people, their main issue is that, hey, this film is really not about us. It is about some white guy with his son. But also the film doesn't really tell our story. which was a much more complicated story, that the people who suffered the Lord's Resistance most horrific crimes were kept locked up in so-called protection camps where they were not protected. About 2 million people for almost a decade and a half. And they, most of them died from disease and other problems, not so much the actions of the rebels. And for that, they blame not so much the LRA, they blame their government.
Let me get to some of the criticism of some of the things that you said. There are people who say, while it might be understandable that Africans might feel that this is reinforcing the stereotype that they need help from outside the country, in a way it would be like Germans, you know, during World War II, saying, don't come and help us with Hitler because, you know, we should be able to do it ourselves.
Well, first of all, that is not based in fact. By the time there was an intervention there, there was a crisis in Europe. Joseph Kony is a, he is just a symptom of state failure in that area. To make this about Joseph Kony is to miss the big picture, and most people are correctly upset about this because, first of all, even where he is, Joseph Kony is a minority. I can tell you there are about 12 rebel groups around that area, and even the elimination of Joseph Kony from that conflict won't end the mm-hmm. suffering of the people within that area.
And by the way, you have said that the other criticism you have is that you want the focus to be on some of the problems that Uganda is facing now, in particular with some of these former child soldiers who are now suffering all sorts of different problems, for instance, nodding disease. Go through some of the things that you would like people to know about now about Uganda.
For instance, people have left the camps and have been returning to their homes. There are all manner of problems associated with rebuilding their lives, including that Gulu and the district surrounding it have got some of the highest rates of HIV and AIDS. You talk about some of the former abductees and child soldiers. Many of them have had to migrate to the cities to take on jobs as security guards. Many of them remain unemployed within the streets of Gulu. There is a high incidence of not just ordinary crime associated there, but also, you know, child prostitution. I'll give you a really sad story about child wives of these rebels who are being rejected by their communities. Some of them are right outside of Gulu, not far from where Invisible Children has its offices. And they are today, you know, surviving as prostitutes. And then there's this nodding disease, which has affected largely people who have come out of the war-affected areas. No one knows what's causing it. CDC can't figure it out.
It's like a neurological disease. Are they sleeping? What's happening?
It is a form of narcolepsy or epilepsy and renders its victims as vegetables. It's affected 4,000 children. Most of them are born out of that conflict. So there are these contemporary problems right outside the offices of this charity. A little consultation would have helped assure people in northern Uganda that this charity not only was focused on Joseph Kony, but the aftermath of his of the hell that he has visited on these communities.
Welcome back to our conversation with Angelo Izama of Uganda's Daily Monitor newspaper about Kony 2012, that viral video that calls for a world response to Joseph Kony, who abducted thousands of children in northern Uganda before moving on to other African countries like the Democratic Republic of Congo or the DRC. American Jason Russell formed the Christian charity Invisible Children and made Kony 2012. He says it's oversimplified on purpose, but critics say it has a whiff of white man's burden, to which columnist Nicholas Kristof, a big supporter, says, this isn't a white man's burden, it's a human burden. Angelo, you've been telling us why Ugandans don't like the film, but do they know about it?
Well, not much. It's just beginning to dawn on Ugandans just how much the world has paid attention to the film. Remember that in the 90s, when the LRA was doing some of its havoc, we had probably just about 12,000 telephone landlines. Today, we have got about 14 to 15 million mobile phones, but internet penetration is still very low. Few people have watched it, and those who have responded really badly.
Well, one who has seen it hasn't, and that's Jacob, the former child soldier who's at the heart of the film. I'm sure you were aware of him. He defends the film. He says it's not too late because this fighting and suffering is going on elsewhere. He welcomes this attention.
Any attention on what's going on in the DRC is welcome. But to say that this is a silent war, it's just a fallacy. Joseph Kony has been indicted by the International Criminal Court. Conflict in that region has been on the agenda of the United Nations and every other person for a very long time. And Uganda has got 4,000 troops after Joseph Kony.
There are those who support the charity but still worry a little bit about the impact. Journalist Liz Wainwright worked with Invisible Children. She said they've had a huge impact in your area in Uganda, well-respected by other NGOs. Her worry, though, is that if there is a military move against Kony, it'll be children that will be guarding him.
That's quite true. There is a gentleman who's being put on trial in Uganda called Thomas Kweyelo. He rose to become one of the LRA's top commanders, but he was abducted at the age of 13. And one wonders, you know, how much responsibility he bears. As for high schoolers, all these young children who are interested in what Invisible Children has done with this film, the criticism that has come on the wake of the film has also, you know, opened their eyes to other narratives. And that this is in fact a good thing. Well, I often have trouble, you know, getting the attention of outsiders to this part of the world. And I think that if they're beginning to learn about what is going on by hearing our criticism of this film, that too is an advantage, and I welcome it.
Well, Ida Sawyer, who's a researcher for Human Rights Watch in Congo, says that while she supports the film, she says it also might take attention away from another problem, which is her concern that there may be human rights abuses by the Ugandan army. Others are saying that the Ugandan army might have recruited some of the former child soldiers from Kony's Lord's Resistance Army. So do you worry that President Obama has sent a small number of military advisors to help the Ugandan military fight and find Kony? Many people in the U.S. were surprised to hear that announcement this fall.
I am not surprised. As a matter of fact, by the time the Bush presidency was ending, what we were hearing from the White House was that it was pretty determined then to go after Kony specifically. Speaking to that, you would say that what the film has done is drawn American attention to what has been a largely quiet engagement by the U.S. Government in that part of the world. And I would add that there are many other issues associated with the militarization of Central Africa. As you know, that is one of the most lucrative pieces of real estate in the world right now. At the border where these rebels are operating, Uganda has just discovered a world-class oil field. And there is concern by many people that increased militarization in a resource-rich area has its own problems. Joseph Kony, he operates like a mercenary. Like most rebel groups in this area, it depends on who is paying them and supplying them. Joseph Kony has exploited the envy and the competition of neighboring governments to continue plying his trade. He's not the only one. The focus of international intervention, whether by the court or by this film, is really on the enforcers, not so much the mafia bosses. They leave the conflict entrepreneurs alone.
Couple last questions. Do you worry that Uganda and might be finding itself in some kind of holy war? The filmmaker of Kony 2012 is an evangelical Christian. Joseph Kony claimed to be a Christian channeling the voice of the Holy Spirit. B.E. Wilson writes on the site alternate.org that Invisible Children has received hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations from conservative Christian groups that funded things like Prop 8 in California, which outlawed gay marriage in California. And we know that Christians were accused of pushing Ugandan lawmakers to considering a law that would have outlawed homosexuality.
These are interesting sideshows way before Invisible Children. As you know, the Bush presidency controversially promoted abstinence with regard to Uganda's fight against HIV/AIDS. In the case of Uganda, there is no large ideological or religious element to this. There is no holy war. These rebels and their friends, governments and their allies, are engaged in basically competition over power and over resources. Mm. And that is really as plain as it comes.
What do you think is going to happen on April 20th?
Well, in Uganda, I am not sure. I have added my voice to that of many other people saying that because of local sensitivities that they should call off their Uganda activities. Beyond that, I had a small exchange with the Ugandan Prime Minister, and I've spoken to, you know, people who are on the ground. They think that attempts to get this rebel out of that conflict zone are proceeding quite well, and well before this film was put on the map. And our hope is that this whole chapter of Joseph Kony comes to an end, so that people can attend to the real challenges facing the country and facing the region.
Angelo Izama, a reporter for the Daily Monitor, Uganda's leading independent newspaper, commenting on Kony 2012, the internet sensation. Angelo, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.